Well, there's one that I have been like teetering on whether or not I wanted to share. And then I was like, you know what? I should share it because we're not the only shop that's probably in this situation and everybody needs to hear it.
Easy Way. If you go to easyway.com/giveaway, that's $250 in product credit. They give away every single month. Very simple. easyway.com/giveaway. We've got Multicraft Daddy, Multicraft_Daddy. If you go to his Instagram, he is also giving away stuff from his Instagram account. Send him your email address. And he's sending out a lot of PMI tape I've seen, but he's also making incredible content. I've been around for 50 plus years doing screen printing and digital supplies. And we've got Stalls. Stalls is always there to take your custom apparel to the next level. They're the leader in heat printing solutions, whether it's equipment, transfers, or support for your business. Make sure to use Hustler2O to get 20% off your next DTF order. And last but not least, GraphX Source. Hit them up, graphxsource.com. Use the code PrintavoPod24 for 50% off your first vector set or embroidery order. They plug and play with Printavo, any other shop management solution, and are a huge piece in a lot of different shops. Really cool to see. So I appreciate you guys being able to join us. I had a bunch of random things I wanted to ask you, but the reason why I wanted you guys to come back on and to get an update and see how everything was going was because of this card that you sent. So for YouTube listeners, you could see it. For audio listeners, it's a holidays card, which thank you so much. It's very kind of you to send. It says, Merry Adventures, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. And after years of saying maybe next year, we finally pulled off the impossible, a full 2-week vacation away from the shop. We traded ink stains for mountain views and spent time exploring glaciers, Yellowstone, and Grand Tetons. It was a reset that we definitely needed and forever grateful for. So there's a couple of things on there, but I thought that was really cool. And I feel like, you know, who doesn't want that, right? Like, no, I don't think anybody wants to be. Sure, we have super busy seasons, but I don't think anybody ever wants to be fully stuck in the business and tied to it forever. That, you know, that kind of sounds miserable, actually. So anyway, what was if we go back to this time when you made that decision, what was the impetus?
I've never done Christmas cards. I've never had time. And I love following you and Chrisette, all your travels and stuff. And I'm like, when we finally got to have a vacation, I'm like, man, this is going to be my Christmas card. This is going to be it because it's our first vacation. I'm going to get a Christmas card out because I like to receive those. Like, I enjoy that. I like seeing what everybody's doing. And so I sent them to as many people as I could get out. I literally was down to the wire as usual, but it was fun. And, you know, that was really our first like real vacation, real time away from the shop for more than just a couple days. So
when, like in how long?
Ever.
Like forever. since we pretty much started in 2009, you know, we would take a long, you know, weekend here and there, probably 3 days at the most have we been away from the shop. You know, so it's been a long time coming.
Yeah, that's cool. How logistically was it? Just like, screw it, we're just going to do this. Was it, let's pick a slow time to make it easier? Was it you were able to hire certain people that could manage certain things, or like what? How did you make it work?
So
go ahead, Josh.
Go ahead, Deanna. We've had a longtime employee who is our daughter, who we finally moved up to operations manager, and felt like that she could handle anything that came up when we were gone. It also helps, you know, that we do use Printavo and we can work remotely. So not to say that we were completely removed from the shop, you know, when we were gone, but the working through the cloud and everything definitely helps you to be able to do that. And, you know, I spent my mornings maybe checking some steps or moving some jobs around, but that was pretty much it.
Starlink helps. when you're traveling.
Yeah.
That's true. It works super well.
Mm-hmm. Josh had to do a lot of actually troubleshooting over the phone, which he has incredible patience. So he can walk anybody through anything pretty much. And so, yeah, it was supposed to be a 3-week trip. We narrowed it down to 2 because we got a little freaked out about just being gone so long. And we had just let go of a production manager. So we were a little nervous, but Alicia handled it great. And I guess Josh was able to handle a lot virtually. So that was good.
Yeah, that's really cool. Were you able to do the 3 weeks if you wanted to stay there? Like, would anything have gone wrong?
I think that we could have. I think by the time the 2 weeks was over, you know, handled some issues that came up and it worked out. And I think we could have stayed gone another week. I'm not sure because we'd only planned at that point in time for the 2 weeks. So I think we just were on a schedule and came back.
Oh, okay. What do you think? What do you think got exposed when you left? Because sometimes, like, I don't know what's going to necessarily break. Like, I'm thinking about all this stuff, but I don't know exactly what's going to break down potentially process-wise until you actually leave.
Me watching how much Josh was still involved, because he was really kind of playing the production manager role, how much he was needed on a daily basis for separations, for screen printing, was probably the biggest eye-opener and maybe area that I think we're now working to improve on. We're doing a little cross training on that now. So it's not just all on him. And so the team can, like, you know, handle things and troubleshoot on their own too. So although we've worked hard to, like, kind of make the business, you know, work on the cloud and train employees, I think that was probably one of the bigger areas that kind of surfaced while we were traveling, was just the separations artwork side, making sure that was good for screen printing so that they could stay running.
Yeah, interesting. And, like, Josh, do you think, like, when do you think you could have taken a week out of the business? Granted, you know, sounds like you're still doing some of the operational stuff, which totally fair, but is there a point where you feel like you could have stepped out earlier?
Yeah, I think we probably could have. You know, it's because I do a lot of troubleshooting, you know, Deanna does too, but I'm more of the production side and I handle the kind of the IT side too. And just feeling like, you know, fires come up every day and I'm putting out fires all day long. Right. And, to be able to just trust that somebody else could handle it was tough. Even though I did have to call in and kind of work remotely, I do feel like previously we could have done that. You know, and I am the expert screen printer around here. And when we actually left, we had 2 employees that were screen printing for us that hadn't even been here an entire year yet. So just the training that we do now opposed to how we used to do it before, and knowing that we need to have more employees and us step back, you know, that would have been something that we should have done earlier for sure.
Mm. How many people do you guys have now?
Well, if you count, so we have
14.
And then we also have 2 artists at Graphic Source, and we have a remote assistant also.
So there's 11 and a half in-house, and then we have 2.5 virtual. And then Josh and I, who are still very much in the business. So 16, if you put that all together.
Gotcha. And your daughter as an operations manager sounded like a pivotal role that allowed for actually handing off some of your day-to-day to like be physically out of the business.
Yeah. And she transitioned from sales manager. She's been with us, I believe, since 2015. And, you know, she started helping out on the floor. She transitioned into sales and then she moved into sales manager. And then we got to the point where, you know, it's time for her to move into a bigger role and to be able to handle day-to-day stuff so that we could, you know, remove ourselves. And that's our goal, is to, you know, really step back and be able to not be involved in the day-to-day stuff and have it run by itself. I think that's probably everybody's goal that owns a shop, but it's easier said than done for sure.
Ooh, that's actually kind of interesting. So, like, Deanna, what do you think? Okay, doing the trip, and now we've got a fresh year started, 2026. What do you think you handle now that you don't want to handle by the end of the year? And then secondarily, like physically, how do you not do it?
The only thing that kept me stuck in the business was like our payroll. I definitely already got that going. So it's like, I can do that 100% virtual now. I don't have to be in person at all. That was kind of a sticky point last year, and we kind of had to time our vacation around that. So that was kind of
Is it a new software thing that you picked?
Yeah, I worked with, it's actually my brother-in-law who has the payroll company. And so I worked with him on like what the pain points were. And one of them was just like, you know, I need to be able to email out pay stubs. I mean, as something as simple as that, not have to do that in person. So that was kind of the last piece of the puzzle for me to be able to be 100% virtual. So I got that taken care of. The other part of that, which I'll, you know, tack back onto Josh, is like, we've realized in that trip too, that we needed more cross training because we had continually people out sick. And it got really stressful. So I think in the last, even since our trip, the last 6 months, we've drastically improved that with a lot of cross training. We actually have a screen printer that we transferred into a floater position. So he is now learning how to do all things around the shop. But the hardest thing is he knows how to screen print, so he can cover multiple areas. So cross training has been a huge improvement for us to be able to hopefully take another vacation this fall. So
how exactly do you do the cross training part? Is it moving them into that different role for, you know, a certain amount of weeks and then they go back, or like, you know, cause it is tough, right? When someone's good at one thing, you kind of like don't want to touch it, but I get the point of, you know, yeah, people calling out or people sick. If you don't have redundancy, then it's you doing it.
Yeah, for sure. And like Deanna mentioned, when we were deciding, okay, look, we need a floater, I made the demand that the floater had to know how to screen print, because that was always a pain point before. If we had a screen printer, that it was correct. Yeah, we never had that floater position before. And so we took our best screen printer who had been with us the longest and said, okay, do you want to be a floater? He said, yes. And what that allows is, like before, if we had a screen printer that was gone, I would have to hop on press and print all day or all week when they were on vacation or whatever. And so that was one of the things that really helped, was so that person can now jump into that position. Because, like, I mean, it's not like you can just send somebody over to heat pressing and then they can just take care of it, but it's much easier to train that than somebody to learn how to screen print a, you know, a 7-color print. Then as far as the training goes, we just pick our slow times and send them to certain departments. Hey, you're going to be working here for the next week or the day, or even if it's 4 hours. And I let him know that you have to learn every department so that you're valuable to us. And then I can trust that when somebody's gone, that I can throw you in that and we don't have any downtime.
Oh, so this is a part of the new hire stuff now too. This isn't just, you know, so anyone else you bring in, this is just an expectation.
Well, no, that's for the floater position where we're having him cross-train.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we have other employees too that we've cross-trained, but it's not as much, you know, it might be one other department or something. So since we, Josh and Alicia work really good managing the schedule, and they move people around all the time, especially during our slow time when we're like trying to find work for people and we have bottlenecks in certain areas. So they're really good at moving people around. And the more people that we cross train, the more that flexibility we have. But yeah, when we were gone, we had a lot of people sick. You know, it seemed like this last time we left too, there was like a virus that goes through our shop, and we're like, and it just put so much stress on Alicia. So yeah, I think we'll just continue to emphasize that cross training piece, you know, and the more that we can cross train our employees, then that adds value to them and their positions. And then they can, you know, earn a higher wage that way too. So it's a win-win for all of us.
You talked about higher wage. Do you adjust pay if you say, okay, hey, I see you've mastered this department or whatever, as well as your own, or how does that work?
You know, we once a year do a annual review, and that's when we'll do compensation. And you know, we take that into account for sure, you know, because the more things that they can do around here, it really helps. And so we do, I wouldn't say that we have like a procedure on how to handle it exactly, but it's handled during the annual review.
I like sticking to the annual review as well. I thought it helped reduce some of the mid-year, you know, salary adjustment questions. Just saying, hey, this is something we do on a standard annual basis at your 1 year. And that helped, you know, or also, yeah, getting a lot of like, well, I want an adjustment like after 4 months or 6 months or whatever the deal was, that was hard to, without a process, that was hard to deal with.
Yeah, we do a biannual review also, but there's no compensation review at that time. It's only once a year.
Gotcha. And then I was just curious, you mentioned there was one VA or assistant type person. What's their role?
Yeah, we have two artists with Graphic Source. And then we have a part-time VA that helps us with our purchasing and any administrative needs that we have. For example, right now we're going through all of our pricing, our Printavo products, updating those with new pricing. And so, like, you know, we'll have her go through, okay, here's the AS color catalog, update all the prices in Printavo. So she's handling that for us right now.
She also does all the ordering for us every day.
That's pretty cool. And then so she's just monitoring a status and places it for you?
Yeah, she has a user in our Printavo. And so she's one of us, you know, and she goes into the purchasing module and does all the purchasing that, you know, because every time we create a job, we set it up for purchasing. And so she's monitoring that daily and ordering. We order daily. So she takes care of that.
How did you guys find her?
Maybe a Printavo Print Hustlers podcast. I don't know. You guys had mentioned using somewhere.com or Support Shepherd. Yeah. And so I finally just decided to try it last year and have no regrets. It's been fantastic.
That's amazing. Yeah. It's crazy. I had dinner with another shop that does like part custom, part retail work. And he has a team in the Philippines, I think maybe 3 or 4 people, maybe 5 people. Just doing a lot of more operational related stuff, even more kind of personal assistant related stuff too. And so, yeah, it's pretty wild. It seems that it's almost you have to have this person there. I mean, just what the pay can be and versus what it would be in the States and for what some of the roles and more repetitive tasks that they can be able to handle. And they're really competent. And so I guess what I'm saying is it's like, it's almost silly not to have that role in today's day and age.
It's super helpful. And I could see us adding on to our virtuals assistance, especially with as much as we're on the cloud now, it's just so easy to do it. What finally got me to make the leap was Steven saying, well, they're not going to take anything from me. They're no different than an employee inside your shop who can also take the, you know, steal things from you or whatever. Like they're just people. And I'm like, oh my God, why am I overthinking this? Yeah.
Yeah. There is a goofy thing with the location. Like you kind of think that, you know, oh, you have to watch them closely, but you're right. To your point, if you treat it just like another employee, like wherever they are, it's a lot easier. And then I think they stay longer too. Cause I feel like if you treat them as a contractor in a way versus a team member, you mentally don't interact with them the same way.
Yeah, we enjoy her very much. She's in the UK. So her hours don't really line up with us that much, but so she kind of works a night shift, but she was fine with it, had no issues, and she's been a fantastic addition. I hope to someday, like she's only 20 hours a week right now. I hope that she can continue to grow with us and be full time. because she's so helpful.
Josh, on your end, what do you feel like is this year is going to be the biggest challenge for you and your end of the business?
For one, for the starters, you know, I check all the SEPs, and that's what I was doing, you know, when we were on vacation. And I kind of figured out that I need to, because I would always just go and fix whatever graphic source didn't, you know, do correctly. So more training with them and to be able to get our SEPs coming to us how they should. And then also we're training one of our employees to check those SEPs instead of me. So that's a big thing that I'm trying to get away from altogether, you know. The other big thing that we got going on is we purchased a building, and so we're going to be moving into that building, you know, in the summer, hopefully, and that's where most of my efforts are going to be focused. And for me to be able to do that, I really need to remove myself from day-to-day operations. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. So how do you think you actually remove yourself from the sort of, I'll call it final layer of the SEPs, like SEPs Q&A?
Yeah, so I've already started doing that with the training of the new employee and like just having her do that. Like I haven't checked a SEP. I know it's only Tuesday, but I haven't checked a SEP this week or like Thursday or Friday of last week. I didn't touch it. So I know that it's moving in the right direction. You know, and she does have a question. She knows she'd come up to my office and, you know, just say, hey, I haven't dealt with this before. And I walk her through it. So it's really going well. So I just had to realize that it could be done and to let go of it. And that's a lot of the stuff.
What role is that she stepped into?
So she actually does all of our darkroom stuff, and she is the press assistant. So she, so I just figured that was a natural thing for her to do since she was in that room already, and she knows, you know, what the screen should look like and the art should look like when she's burning it.
How does it feel like after? I know, like you said, it's only been 4 days, but
yeah. No, it feels good. Cause we did, we were, gone. We went back east for a week, a couple weeks ago, and my son got married and she handled most of the stuff while we were gone. So that was, I know it's moving in the right direction. It feels great. Right. And so I can focus on other things.
Yeah. Congrats on your son too. It's so fascinating because I feel like all of us are kind of physically addicted to completing like the little tasks like that. But in the only way that I have personally found stepping out of it is physically removing then myself, like not being in there or on Slack or in the message flow or communication flow. And then when stuff does bubble up, you know, creating some sort of fix or something like that. But yeah, I don't know. And I know Stevens like pushes the whole like physically don't be there on certain, like pick a day and actually leave. And that's the way of breaking that addiction a bit. But I saw when Josh was describing his improvements, Danny, you were smiling too. So I don't know if it was like happy about it or what.
I'm stoked. Yeah, it feels like a win. And it's hard to let go things. And I've had my struggles as well. But I think, you know, like Josh, you said, like, you know, it was important for me to not just fix the problem, but teach the artist at Graphic Source how I want it to be done. And that's where, you know, owners can get in their own way a lot, is like constantly just fixing it. We'll just fix it. Instead of like teaching the other person, no, this is how the right way to do it. And so sometimes we have to, you know, get after ourselves, like stop doing that. We have to teach them.
On your end, what do you feel like is your biggest challenge for this year?
My biggest challenge, checking off my goals. I didn't complete all my goals last year, so some of them carried over. I didn't really like that much, but sometimes I have too high expectations for the amount of time involved.
What were some of the goals that you didn't check off?
Well, there's one that I have been like teetering on whether or not I wanted to share. And then I was like, you know what? I should share it because we're not the only shop that's probably in this situation and everybody needs to hear it. But that's like taking care of business or financial part if something should happen to us. And for us, that's a family trust. And setting out what happens in our absence and where things go and who's in charge. And right now we don't have that in place. And that just freaks me out on a daily basis. And it didn't get done last year and it is going to get done this year. But, you know, I think a lot of shops probably are in the same situation. So that's why I'm putting myself out there and saying it is that, you know, it's really easy for us as owners to like put ourselves on the back burner. And I hope that we can move ourselves to the front of the line this year and get that taken care of. So,
yeah, that's an interesting process. I did one, 3-ish years ago or so. And, awkwardly slash a bit morbid, but you're right, like very important, right? It's like, okay, you're hit by a bus, now what? And so, yeah, there are, especially with a family or something, there are a lot of questions as to how does this work and where does things get divvied up? And so to not allow the state to have to manage this type of things, what's the next step? Is that something where you schedule time with a lawyer and work through that? Or is it just like an internal family discussion and then bring it to a trust lawyer? How does it work?
I think it starts with a phone call to a lawyer and getting that set up. And then, you know, just working through the questions and the process. But, you know, it's not just for me, it's not just my immediate family, but like the whole team we have here, I feel very responsible for all of their lives and this whole business. And so, like, that's part of it. I need to know that they're also taken care of if, you know, something happens to us, what that next plan is, you know, giving Alicia or whoever the opportunity to take control of the ship without, you know, things going into probate or getting into, you know, really a rough situation where you can't access money and things. So, there's a lot of parts really that, you know, go into making sure that that's a secure situation.
Yeah, that's a good point. That and probably some sort of term life insurance. I know there's a lot of life insurance products out there and it's actually kind of confusing, but you're right. Those two aren't talked about nearly enough. What do you think was a big accomplishment that you did check off on that list last year?
Josh, you're gonna have to help me because I always like forget things, but probably updating our website was like the biggest headache for me. And I finally got that off my plate. Although, you know, there's still some things under construction, of course, but.
What did you want to change on the website? Was it like better searchability or just like up more modern? Or
It was outdated. It was probably 8-10 years old and I wanted to completely redo it. The platform that it was in was very hard for me to get in and make any updates, you know, to keep it fresh. And so I completely moved platforms, which I did hire someone to help me make sure that SEO transition went as smoothly as possible. But since then, you know, we have a fresh new site. I can go in and edit it. I can do anything I want to it, you know, worked on embedding AI into it as well. So, you know, we have that searchability also. I think, you know, we started with like, you know, Matt Marcotte had a suggested AI that he put together. So I followed those steps and embedded that, but as well as worked with our SEO person. He's kind of, you know, also helped us do some keyword, you know, some stuff on the back end to make you more searchable in ChatGPT and the AI world versus Google. So all of the things are very important, of course, but, you know, that's just a new dynamic to the whole thing. It's not just Google anymore.
Yeah, that's a great point. Are you guys able to see that by chance? Like people that find you via ChatGPT?
We are. Our website platform tells us that percentage. We also ask in-house, you know, how people find us. It's very helpful. I would say Google's always been our, referrals have always been our number one. Google was our number two. AI might be almost tying with Google at this point.
Holy cow. What website platform did you like move to one or which one do you use now?
Yeah, we moved from WordPress to Wix.
And Wix is way better at doing sort of the AI stuff.
I don't know that it's better at that, but for me, functionality wise, it was just easier for me to edit and handle it. I struggled with WordPress. I needed to get it away from just like a website designer that every time I wanted to make a little change, I'd have to pay a lot of money. I needed to just make those changes on my own. So that's why I just, we completely started from a new slate in Wix.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I find that too with WordPress. There's a lot of manual, like it feels like it, maybe it's just as outdated in a way where Squarespace and Wix and those are, you're able to really like describe things or visually change things a lot easier.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Do you guys do financial projections for the year? Like, you know, okay, it's January or whatever, it's December. This is what the year is. Look, this is where we want to end up, maybe sales-wise and expenses-wise.
Yeah, we do. We put a certain percentage of growth that we want in every year. And we actually have a platform that puts a graph out so all the salespeople know it and they can see daily if they're hitting their numbers and stuff like that. So.
Oh, wow. And that's tied in. Like, how does that work or what system helps them be able to track it?
So I worked with somebody that helped kind of, it's basically based on Google Sheets. You know, it's pulling information from Printavo, putting that in Google Sheets. And then it, you, via Looker Studio, it creates like a dashboard. I had help building that out. I did not build it myself. And it's been a fantastic tool for our sales team because they can finally see. I mean, Josh used to always give them like weekly numbers or daily numbers, but now they like can see it live all the time. And it's been exciting change for them because it adds, you know, more excitement to their day. They're like, oh, we just need like, you know, $2,000 more to hit our goal for the day, you know, and, you know, it makes it not just order taking. It makes it a little bit more fun. And they're looking out to who haven't I heard from yet and how can I upsell? And so it's been a healthy, competitive thing that's come to our sales office. And it's been really good for us.
That's really cool. And these are daily or weekly goals? Or how does the sort of gamification part work?
Yeah, they can see, they have a dashboard that they can see hourly. It updates numbers in real time. And, you know, in the past, when I was giving them like a weekly update or nothing, I never heard anything from the salespeople. And since we started this, they come to me and tell me, oh, we did this. They're so excited too. And it makes a big difference. And it has affected them how they, you know, reach out to people where they hadn't done it before because they know that they want to get to that certain goal that we're looking at.
That's cool because it sounds like because it's more visual and they want to hit that daily or weekly goal. And then I'm assuming like commission is based off of hitting whatever the quotas are.
We don't give commissions off of quotas. Our sales staff actually get a commission on every dollar they sell.
On a gross amount, or do you guys have to figure out some sort of net?
No, it's a gross amount, and it's a very small percentage. It's 1%.
But it's simple to calculate then, because you can see it visually, and it's very easy to math it in my head, 1%.
Absolutely.
That's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, it's worked well for us. I know that's kind of out of the norm as far as, but I don't know. It works for our shop. That's all I can say. Everyone has to figure out what works for their shop, right? But we do a base pay plus 1%. And it's not just on new customers. It's on every order. And that's because, you know, relationships matter. It's not just about the first order for us.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Do you have to do then sort of a sales weekly meeting now with this thing? It sounds like you were doing something before or some communication with the goals and updating it before, but like, how does that work? Like, cause I find sometimes it's helpful. Hey, where's you guys, maybe it's at the top of your head about a customer that comes in regularly or hasn't, or where's this at, or do you have to do that?
Yeah, I mean, so we have a few meetings that go on around here. Twice a week, we have sales and production get together, and they talk about, you know, what are the current jobs? What are the issues? What are the rushes? You know, that type of more production-focused information. And then once a week, we have a manager meeting, and that includes our office manager, our operations manager, and Josh and I. And we talk about sales numbers, projections. If it's slow, what are we going to do? How are we going to pivot? If it's busy and we're bottlenecked, what are we going to do? So we are constantly evaluating numbers in that meeting and then making adjustments to the business and staff accordingly. So it's very helpful. Yeah.
If it is slow, how do you guys think about it? Is it, are we, you know, are you thinking of marketing campaigns or email campaigns or, you know, what is the proactive, I guess, next step?
Yeah. So, we are, because I'm the marketing person and I wear a lot of hats. Marketing probably is not as strong as it should be. But you know, I do the outside networking events. So I'm trying to wrangle in any like potential new clients. And usually I'm seeking out, you know, I seek out all clients, but I'm kind of going after some of the larger ones that might be in our area and, that I think could be good lifelong clients and repeat orders. And then our sales staff really focuses on, because they are inside salespeople, they do use a CRM where they strategize their warm outreach. And that's, you know, who ordered last year at this time? Have we heard from them? Reaching back out. Also, you know, we have a couple other strategies, but basically they utilize our existing customer base. They constantly are reviewing it to make sure that we're staying on top of our clients and hearing back from our clients, building relationships, right? So that's their role. And they've been doing fantastic at that. I would say it has a huge impact when you pay attention to your clients. You know, sometimes we take for granted like a customer and like its potential, and like, you know, they're actually out buying a lot more stuff that maybe they're not buying from you. And so the more conversations you have with them, the more check-ins you have with them, suddenly you're helping them with more than just t-shirts, and you can help them with promotional products, and maybe they didn't realize you could embroider bags or something. So the more you stay in front of them and communicate with them, the more you'll see your sales increase just by your existing client base. So that's been a huge focus for us.
What's the CRM you guys have found to work well?
We use Google Streak.
Oh, okay. That one that plugs into Gmail pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. Last year was a... Maybe last year, the year before, we moved over to Google Workspace. And, you know, so the Google Street platform just like plays right with it. So that was the easiest option for us.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. Has promo been a growing part of the business, or it's always been pretty steady, or are you trying to push it more?
You know, I think it's, we've been pushing it a little bit more. I would say that it's grown. I want to say in 2024, it was maybe only 5% of our business, but I think it's up to 10 now. We don't push it heavily, but, you know, I think that's just part of our sales, you know, communicating with their clients and showing them everything that we can do. Oh, well, we can help you with that. You know, why are you getting it from those guys? We can help you with that. So, yeah, I think it's just naturally kind of grown a little bit as the salespeople have become more confident and they're learning to upsell more, right? Because they're watching their numbers. So there's some factors that have played into that, but I would say it definitely is growing. And I think that we will continue to push it and watch it to grow because we don't have to have equipment for it or anything. Like that's an easy add-on.
For sure. Josh, you're talking about like a growth percentage on the year. I feel like I personally would make that too aggressive. And then my projections were off in terms of like, okay, these are the expenses needed to be able to hit this and like when to hire. And then, you know, if we're not following it, maybe it adds more stress than I needed. What do you feel like was a reasonable growth percentage that you felt like was actually realistic to create better projections and, you know, and for any shop to help, like, is it like, hey, look, you should on average probably look for 5% or 10%. What did you think?
Yeah, we typically would reach for 15%, and we would reach that, you know, we're typically between 10 and 15% is what we've grown year over year. Well, last year, we only made 7% growth. And I do think that putting that number up too high and then the salespeople seeing, you know, where they're expected to be at and they can't reach that, we did lower our expectations for this year. Just due to the fact that, yeah, we want to be more realistic on it. And, you know, the size that we've become, you know, we're hoping to, you know, do about 3.3 this year. It's harder to gain 15% at that without going out and get some big clients. So I think we have to be more realistic than that.
That is interesting though, right? Like there's this aspect called the limiting factor. There was this podcast I was listening to with Elon and he was Elon Musk. And he was talking about what is his limiting factor? And he always tries to spend 80% of his time, whether he likes to or not, on that limiting factor of, you know, in his world, it's, you know, data centers in space right now. And so like, what is the like main aspect that limits his ability to do that and spend the majority of the time? I find it's hard because, you know, you have to almost take joy in doing the things you don't maybe enjoy. Like you talked about, okay, we got to go find big clients. Well, it's like, there's a lot of friction in doing that. And sometimes I'll default back to the smaller tasks and like, let me start my day, get a little bit of momentum. And then, you know, next thing I know, it's like 2-3 o'clock and I that gets kicked to the next day. How do you guys think about that? Right. Like, so if you said, okay, if we want to get 10, 15% and hey, sales team, here's what we need to do. Deanna, you're like, okay, I got to go to these different events. What do you think that means from an actual technical perspective of being able to bring in those clients? Or maybe it's driving more existing revenue or, from like additional add-on sales or like, how do you basically do that?
We've struggled in that because we've never done any type of, you know, advertising or, you know, outreach. And Deanna's really only started going to this stuff in the last couple of years, which has made a huge difference. We've gained some really big clients from that. And I don't like, you know, going out and do the sales pitch. And I know a lot of people don't, but Deanna's better at it. And she forces herself to do it though, you know, and it's made a huge difference. But, you know, gaining more business from your current clients and your top customers, I think, is the easiest way to do that. And then you grab those other new customers, you know, the ones you want here and there. I think that would be how I would think about going about it. I don't know. What about you, Deanna?
No, I'd agree. I think that's been our strategy for the last few years. That's been working well for us. There could be other strategies if you wanted to grow faster. I'm not really interested in growing super fast. Slow and steady is fine with me. in fact, I think last time we talked, I was like, you know, maybe I don't want to double in size. So for me, I keep zeroing in on customer relationships and how can we really just nail that. And I think every day we're working on improving that process and how we can nail it, how we can be better. And, you know, I the number one way to start doing that is to pick up your phone and respond to people within 24 hours when they email you. Like, these seem like little things, but a lot of businesses don't do it. And I think for us, like, the whole idea is we need to make ordering easy for people, because there's lots of places for them to choose from. And so if we don't make it easy and a great experience, they're going to go somewhere else. Because that's what I would do if I was a consumer.
And that 24 hours thing is interesting to even think about. Like, what is the conversion ratio if you hit 5 minutes, for example, which is, you know, a little bit on the crazier end, but what would it take? Is it we'd convert 50% more? And then what is the average? Like, what does that equate to in dollars perspective?
That would be super interesting. We don't have any software to kind of tell us that kind of information. I know it's out there. There are email platforms that will tell you, you know, your response rates and all that information. For us, that's another expense. And so we haven't done that. But I also think, too, like, it's not, yes, I want to get back to them right away, but it shouldn't be just about speed. It has to be quality. Just like your screen printing or embroidery, your service has to, it's important for it to be quality as well. So if I'm just using something that looks like an AI bot to respond to people, I think that's off-putting. I think it needs to be personal. And so when we respond to people, we try and make it a personal response. That's just how I would want to be handled as a customer. So I try and, that's how we try and do things here.
Sure. I think, so the last question I have, and maybe you guys have different perspectives on this, but you talked about sort of the sweet spot of the business, and like, at 10%, let's just call it 10%, make it easy, on 3 million starting, you know, you do grow into a different size business within 2-3 years with like different needs, different layers of people. I mean, just more people to manage. Like, it's definitely a thing. Overhead and so on and so on. Do you guys think there is a bit of a sweet spot in... Hey, actually, maybe this is good. Maybe we just need to float around with inflation almost, where it's like, okay, our costs are slowly increasing, but like, we're kind of managing that and try to stay at a similar people size. Maybe you, Deanna, first, like, have you, now that, you know, this is part two, what do you think?
Yeah, I think part one, I think I was shooting for, I don't know, I must have said around 3 million. I think we're, it's still probably close to that, because there's something about the size of the team at that point where we can have managers in place. It's not just Josh and I as the managers, but we have people under us also managing. And so it's a personnel, it's almost more of a personnel sweet spot. I have a feeling Josh is going to come back and say 5 million, but.
And you're kind of right. Like, maybe it is a person. But I do feel like the float, you know, especially if you're doing in-house production, that there is, you know, okay, we need more to help produce to, if we're at 6 million, for example, than 3 million.
There's definitely layers to your to the business, right? I mean, we were doing solid at like 1 million, and then all of a sudden it got crazy again. And it's like, you know, processes start breaking, you have more people, like stuff that used to work doesn't work anymore. And so it's like, you're hitting this new level of growing pains. And so that, you know, that happens again and again. Just when you kind of get settled, you grow to another point, and then you've got growing pains again. And, you know, I feel like we're just now kind of getting to a point where we have enough staff. And I think it proved that, you know, because we were able to take that couple week vacation, that we're kind of in that spot. Josh and I are still very much involved, but the team can do it without us for a period of time. And so I think that's great. But I think, you know, we're throwing out numbers of, or I'm throwing out a number of 3 million, but it's going to be different for every shop, depending on what services you provide and your area that you're in. Like, there's a lot of factors. So I don't want anybody to like get the number too stuck in their head. You kind of have to figure out what your own sweet spot is. You know, like one of our friends has a shop in Florida. She doesn't sell as many hoodies as we do. We sell a lot of hoodies. So like our numbers are going to be different than her numbers. She's selling more t-shirts. She's in a warmer climate. So it's going to be a little bit different. So I think, just for people to keep that in mind, you know, you have to figure out what your own sweet spot is. But I'm curious what Josh will say about what our sweet spot should be.
Yeah, as Deanna mentioned, my number's a little bit higher than hers. And the reason why I say that is because I feel like with the management team we have in place now, that we wouldn't have to add more management until, you know, possibly we get to that 4 million mark. And with adding the operations manager, sales manager that we have now, our payroll percentage, you know, compared to revenue has jumped 5%. And I would like to get that back down. And, you know, so our net profit is where I feel like it should be. So getting that 4 million mark, I think that would put us back in that spot. And I think at 4 million with our current staff, maybe adding one more employee would be doable. Because like right now in our slow time, we're struggling to find stuff for employees to do. But when we were, you know, moving in our busy time, we had enough staff here. So, yeah, that's where I see it, you know.
Do you think at 4 million you would, and maybe this has happened in the past or no, like where you say, okay, at a million, this is great. And then you kind of, you know, you're doing the thing. And the next thing you know, you're bigger. Do you think at 4 million you'd feel differently and say, you know, the next step for us is, I don't know, 5 or 6, like, cause it is interesting. Like a lot of us, you probably look back and you'd be like, wow, we're here today. That's kind of crazy. We didn't expect this.
At that, you know, and we've done it before, you know, the 80-20 rule where, you know, 20% of your customer base does 80% of your revenue. We've focused on that in the past. And so then that, we upped our minimums to, you know, weed out some of the, smaller customers that really took up a lot of your time. You know, they're not a construction company that just sends you an email and say, hey, send me another 500 shirts. You know, our sales staff spending time with them, and the onesie twosie orders and the production makes it really tough. So I'm guessing, you know, as we approach that 4 million, we're going to, you know, really dive in and see what customers that we really want to just keep and work with. And, you know, it would probably be another, you know, minimum raise, you know, on our production quantities.
Gotcha. Cool. In the zoning, Deanna and Josh, thanks so much for being able to spend some time and answering these questions. I'm sure all of these always help. Printhousers, we always appreciate you guys being able to join us every single week. Hopefully you were able to learn a few things from behind the curtain at In the Zone Inc. as well. So thank you guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.